You're listening to the Geek Legacy Escape Pod.
The crew coming together and gelling and becoming this, like, you know, intergalactic family that we know and love.
And wacky mayhem ensues.
It just feels like they're trying so hard to capture the fans of the original series.
Yeah, that was hot garbage.
He just got, like, weird, like, creepy uncle weird.
That was a bold choice.
Yeah, I had fun with it.
That's true. It was the 80s.
It must be so bad that they just never rewrite.
You won't make it in the future, do you?
I don't think so, no.
I am not a Tosh ER fan. That's probably the nicest thing I will say.
That is absolutely perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
Hey there, geek boys and girls. Welcome to Geek Legacy's Escape Pod. I am one of three, count them, one, two, three hosts of this show. My name is Randy Van Dyke, and I am joined this fine evening by Mr. Justin Cavender. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hi, Randy. I'm fabulous. Thank you for asking.
Hey. And also, Mr. David Edmondson is here floating around in the Escape Pod with us with zero gravity.
I'd like to think of the three data androids that... that I would be the lore, and I will let you guys figure out which one of you is Data and which one of you is B4. But I would say of the trio, I am definitely the lore of this group.
You got the facial tick down just right.
I'm the Riker, always banging everybody.
Ooh, that's like not that. One of the three Datas, though.
That is I'm deviating. It's a very Riker thing to do.
Well, there's B4, you are DB8.
Yeah, not being able to follow directions is a very B4 quality there, Justin.
I don't want to be a robot. I want to be a real boy.
So does Data. Well,
Riker's a real man.
Yeah. Shut up, Wesley.
Oh, my God. So let's kind of like let's discuss what we're getting ourselves into tonight. So, in this show, we like to watch episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation and, see if it's as good as we remember it being. And most of the stuff we haven't watched since it first ran in the 80s and early 90s. And what we watched this week was the very first episode featuring Lore. It was called Data Lore. It's the 12th episode of season one. It originally aired January 16th, 1988. And according to IMDb, it was rated 7.7 stars, one of the highest rated episodes of the season. And I know we were all looking forward to it because we know Lore is kind of a cool character, Data's brother, so to speak, and we know he's going to cause some trouble later on down the road, but it's like none of us really remembered how he was first introduced to us. So this is the introductory episode, and little did I realize that this was going to be such a meme-worthy episode as well with the whole Shut Up Wesley thing. Oh, my God.
When I saw that, I laughed so hard. When I heard that, I'm like... Because the whole first part of the episode, like, Picard was kind of being a really cool dude. And, like, I'm like, oh, this is Picard I know and love. And then out of nowhere, shut up, Wesley.
Yeah. That was brutal.
I remember Lore from, you know, Descent 1 and 2, where he works with the Borg later, you know, probably like the fourth or fifth season. I couldn't remember our introduction to him. And so it was fun to see, you know, his origin tale.
So the blurb on IMDb for this episode says, "The Enterprise visits the planet where Data was created and discovers another android like him. But when he's assembled, he's not exactly like him." Yeah. So this is where we find out that Data's got an on and off switch. So if any of the women on the crew needed to figure out how to turn Data on, all they have to do is ask Dr. Crusher, because she is sworn to secrecy and she's the only one that knows.
And he gets mad the instant, like, she's not the only person who knows. You told somebody else about your off switch? Thought I was special to you, Data.
Yeah, right? She's just possessive over all the men or like, male-type figures on the ship. She's, in the previous episode, she was, like, licking her fingers and wiping lipstick off of Picard's face. Like, she was either, like, A, the jealous girlfriend, B, the mother, or just C, it's, like, marking her property. Like, you are mine. I am going to groom you for my purposes.
Like a cat. She's a tabby cat.
Exactly. Exactly.
Real quick, I think we should note that this episode was directed by Rob Bowman. And he's the same guy that got us, that gave us The Battle, which was the one of the Ferengi episodes, where Picard had to relive that tragic moment where he killed a bunch of people. And then he also did Where No One Has Gone Before. So with the lion scientist.
Yeah, he's by far the most prolific director to return in this first season, having done three episodes. But I got to tell you, well, maybe I'll ask you, did it feel different to you guys? Did the tone of this entire episode just feel different? And I will point out what struck me, and let me know if it affected you guys the same way. But the music was very synth heavy. It did not sound like any of the Next Generation music that I remember in previous episodes. And the lighting was really kind of harsh, real harsh shadows, and it wasn't nice and soft and beautiful as it normally is. It's almost like they were trying to light and make it sound like an 80s horror movie. I mean, because it's shot in the 80s, so it makes sense, but it felt like they were going for that vibe.
I didn't notice that at all, but now that you mentioned it, when they first went onto the planet and they found the entrance into the room, or into the base, basically, I immediately started thinking of Beneath the Planet of the Apes, where they're, you know, this post-apocalyptic world, and there could be survivors dwelling in here, you know, like these underground dwellers type of thing. And I was like, I remember thinking, like, why am I thinking of fucking Planet of the Apes right now? So maybe on some weird, like, subliminal level, it felt like that. Because it definitely felt like some sort of old sci-fi, like, weirdness to it. That was trying, like, they're, like, a 60s version of the future, I guess. Which is weird when you're talking about Star Trek, because that's exactly what it is. But I definitely was picking up on that vibe. But I didn't even notice the music. It was definitely more the visuals that was getting to me.
Yeah, it was nice. You know, I always like when they go down to the planet, and this was a definite, it felt very, like Justin said, classic sci-fi with, like, you know, kind of that dystopian, like, dead planet that they go on to. Like, the world's pretty much gone, and, you know, we see that a lot in, you know, classic sci-fi, be it, you know, like Logan's Run or things like that. So, you know, it was, or even Blade Runner and stuff like that. It was fun to see this world destroyed. And when they were on the planet, I noticed a definite shift in, like, the color palette and the lighting and stuff like that. And I just assumed it was an artistic choice because they run an alien world and wanted to kind of set the mood for us. But it did feel different. I felt that tonally, like, I thought the tone was what, you know, when we think of classic Next Generation, it's what we think of right up until, you know, Picard says, "Shut up, Wesley."
What a dick. And also, is it kind of weird that when they have these away missions that everyone just leaves their post on the bridge, like one of the most important areas on the ship, and everyone just kind of just says, "All right, well, let me just grab my sack lunch and I'll go on this away trip," because it's fucking Geordi, it's Worf, it's Tasha Yar, it's Riker, it's Data. Yeah.
Everybody jumps on the party bus, and it's funny because they even say, like, yeah, Picard would come too, you know, but Starfleet wouldn't allow it, kind of thing. Yeah.
I'm sure nothing's going to happen of importance in the next, like, 8 to 10 hours while we're on the planet's surface.
So ridiculous.
It's funny because when you watch later Star Trek series, not necessarily Next Generation, maybe it happens there too, but when you watch, like, Voyager or stuff like that, when people are leaving the bridge, you see a random no-name red shirt or whatever go sit in their spot, you know? And that's probably how it actually would run in a situation like that, or probably actually how it does run in the Navy. I don't know. But which is kind of, you know, the command structure that this is based on. But holy crap, yeah. Just abandon ship, just leave Picard there alone with a fucking kid.
It's just Picard, yeah. Troy, and Wesley.
I'm just surprised that they're, because, like, you know, I bring up Battlestar Galactica a lot, I think, on the show. And there was always people that were set to go out and venture. You know, like, they have, like, a designated away team. Like, their pilots go out and do that stuff, you know, like, your Starbucks and your Apollos and your
Hilo
and Boomer Hilo, yeah. Boomer. Like, there are, everyone else stays on the fucking ship. They have designated people to go out and do that stuff. As with Next Generation, it's, and even the original Star Trek too, it's, let's get all of our famous people into one spot.
Everyone who we need to make this ship operate, let's all put them down on the planet. So in case something goes wrong, the Enterprise can no longer move.
Right. I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to just have a set away team, so someone that didn't have to stop what they were doing to come and sit in their other person's chair and then figure out like, where were they at in this whole process? It makes like, more sense.
Yeah, have like one super diplomatic guy or person, you know, just to be able to talk to any kind of alien race, and then have just like the rest of them be like all these beefed up, muscled out, just, you know, bouncer types.
Right.
You know,
right,
phasers.
It makes sense for Tasha or Worf to go, you know, because they're security type folk. But maybe they should have their own team to take, like, you know, grab your people and go or whatever. But
I know I suck on the teat of Star Trek Enterprise all the time, but they had that. They had this group called the Makos, and that was their job. Was they had our security chief, and then occasionally, like T'Pol, the first officer, would go down if it was something they thought they would need, like diplomatic help. But they basically had these trained soldiers, and their whole job was to go down on away missions and. Archer and T'Pol and, you know, Tripp and them, they only went down when it seemed like they were going to have to do something that took more than just like brute force. And I agree with you. It feels odd that all these key cogs in the machine are A, leaving the ship, and B, putting themselves in peril.
Right. Like, hold on, let me log out and close all my apps before I get up for a second.
Right. Cause I can't imagine that Geordi has a ton of, you know, like, hand-to-hand combat experience down on the planet. You know, I would get it, you know, like you said, Worf, Tasha Yar, even Riker. Riker's a badass. He can handle himself, and Data's a machine and can do whatever, but, you know, what's Troy going to do down there?
Right.
Well, she could feel her way, you know, around, see if there's any kind of consciousness that the sensors couldn't read.
Right. So right before she's murdered, she can be like, there's hostility around me.
That would be terrible. Yeah. I guess they all have their own, you know, expertise that they can bring to the table. But I feel like if you have people that are used to going to all these, you know, experiencing new things, then they could bring their expertise with them as well. So that's just obviously there's only a handful of characters on the show, and it makes sense to have them do it. But just from a logistical standpoint, it's a flaw in the show. But that's neither here nor there.
You're not thinking fourth dimensionally, Justin.
Right, I have a real problem with that. Oh, jeez. Anyway, Randy, continue.
So
what do your notes say?
I got notes. Not as many this week, but I do have notes. So Geordi did serve a purpose on the planet's surface. He is the one that found the big old door in the rock, in the papier-mâché rock.
It's a big door.
Yeah. And then it just kind of felt like one of those built in the studio Goonies style caves once they got inside. But the whole like underground lab kind of thing that they discover is really neat, and it looks very big. It looks like they use some sort of real environment to shoot like the big long corridor scene. It didn't look like a set because it was too big. It reminds me of like the tunnels that are under Disney World. It's just like this big subterranean tunnel.
I love tunnel shots like that. Any kind of weird tunnels, like even in the Star Trek reboot. There's that shot when Kirk is with Spock and the little mechanic is running down that long hallway. That's like one of my favorite things ever. I love like those deep space shots. I think they look so cool.
So then they find the big old like stasis chamber where all of Lore's body parts are. And that was to me like the reveal there. That was when I really, really noticed how off the music was, because that was like a big, crazy, crazy reveal with like way over the top synth sound effects and everything. But then when they bring it back to the ship and they start putting it together, it's a matter of, it looks like a department store mannequin. It's like you can see like really shoddy mold lines along the body, and you can see this kind of hollow, and it's just like stuffed with like bits of pipe and wire, and it doesn't look like it would be soft at all. It's like hard inside. And it just doesn't look like what Lore would actually become, or like what Data would actually look like inside.
Yeah, I noticed the music in this scene a lot too, and that it sounded like the music you would hear while you're waiting in line for like Space Mountain or something like that.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about Lore being in pieces. This is one of those Dr. Ian Malcolm moments where your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not that they could, they didn't stop to think if they should, and they just fucking put them back together again. Like Humpty Dumpty.
Like, why not ask yourself, why is this guy in all these pieces? Why is he hiding behind this big door that was hidden behind a rock and there are no people here? Maybe it's a bad idea to turn this fucker on. Maybe. I don't know.
But I would also argue that they've had good luck with Data up to this point. So it's like, hey, maybe we can get another, you know, we can get more labor without another mouth to feed by getting another android on the ship.
Sounds greedy to me, man.
Well, I mean, that's humanity in a nutshell, even in the distant future, even though they claim not to be. But yeah, so I mean, it, don't even look at it as greed. Just look at it as curiosity. I think, you know,
scientists are always like, the bad guys, Randy, in science fiction. They ruin everything.
Well, you know what they say about curiosity and cats?
They like each other.
Yes. But hey, I was happy to see that Argyle, the chief engineer, got some screen time in this episode. Yeah,
he's back.
Yeah, with his beard missing the soul patch. Looking all awkward, acting as wooden and stiff as humanly possible.
Does he get killed? I guess we're just gonna have to wait and see. I feel like Hot Tub Time Machine, where we're just waiting on Crispin Glover's arm to get ripped off. Right? Like, we're just waiting on this guy to get killed.
We've already seen a different chief engineer die, David. It wasn't him, it was a different guy, I think. But we did see one die already on screen.
Yeah, it's crazy that they have multiple ones, because he refers to them as, give me one of my chief engineers, to where there's multiple chief engineers. But yeah, I know the female one died. I could have swore that this one also died. But maybe he dies in a future episode to make room for Mr. LaForge.
Right. So when there is a ship, like let's say like an aircraft carrier, there can't, like in the Navy, there are multiple chiefs on board, but I couldn't tell you how many would be like a specific chief engineer. Like that, just saying it out loud makes it sound like there's one person that is in charge, but it makes sense if there's multiples, but there's definitely multiple chiefs
on a
single vessel.
Yeah, look at it this way. Looking at it as a contemporary Navy vessel or something like that, there would be like a chief engineering of communications, you know, chief engineer for like the engine, chief engineer for the weapon system. You know, there's engineers for all the different technical systems, right. I would think. So I don't know who the head, you know, over like the department head over all of those chiefs would be, what position that would be called. I'm sure military people are just screaming their heads off listening
to this right now. Right. But, so my father was a senior chief in the Navy. And, you know, there was like a chief mess hall on the ship where all the chiefs went to eat. You know, they're enlisted. They're not officers, per se. Like an ensign is technically, you know, an officer. An officer could technically outrank a chief, I suppose. But you would be a real asshole if you said something to a chief. You'd get in a lot of trouble after the fact. you don't do that.
Yeah. So, as we, in a situation like this where Lore is kind of, we see him kind of displaying bad properties, or like he is not the goody two shoes that Data is, and you can tell there's something up with him. You can tell what direction it's going to go pretty quickly, where, you know, he's going to want to do something to gain some sort of power, and he's going to switch places with Data. And especially when he's like asking, hey, brother, when can I get a uniform like yours? You just know that within a few minutes that they're going to be like switching identities, all parent trap style. but this one, it doesn't have the wacky mayhem that ensues. Unless you count Wesley getting yelled at as wacky mayhem.
By two people. Two people tell him to shut up. One of them is his mom.
Yeah, within 30 seconds of each other. That was amazing.
I think when Data inserts his, when he kind of fists them, I think that's kind of wacky mayhem.
Yeah.
It's like acting like a little puppet kind of thing.
Well, and Lore slips Data a robot roofie.
Yeah.
It puts a little something in his drink. I think it's the first time we've seen Data drink on the show too, you know, because he doesn't usually consume or do that kind of stuff in terms of emulating human culture.
Right. I was like, why is he doing this? I'm like,
so he can get roofied.
Yeah, I understand the ceremony of it all, but sounds like it could be a problem, Data. Nothing good can come of this.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to offer you a drink for the first time in your life. Don't question it. Just drink it.
Clearly, but, I can't drink the glass in front of me.
Right. Like, I would totally get it if like, a human had offered him a drink. Because, you know, like, you know, when you bang Tasha Yar and stuff like that, like, sometimes he just wants to do what the humans are doing. but, you know, it was weird that his android brother, who doesn't need a drink, offered him a drink when he doesn't need a drink. And the ceremony of it all seemed odd.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like there could have been a better storytelling reason why Data would be incapacitated. I mean, he could have just been turned off. They just spent the first part of the episode telling us, oh, this is how you turn him off.
Yeah. All it takes is Lore having, like, his trust, and Data turns his back on him, and then, boom, he hits the switch.
Fooled you. Hit the switch. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe you fell for the oldest trick in the book. What's with you, man?
So I would have to go back and look at the other episodes that Rob Bowman directed. But this is another classic case of Wesley knows what's up. He knows how to fix it, and nobody listens to him because he's a kid. And I want to say that the same thing happened in Where No One Has Gone Before. That was another episode.
He recognized that alien guy was doing all the magic. And then what was his other episode?
His other episode was
The Battle.
The battle.
With the Ferengi. Where Picard's ship was gifted to him from the Ferengi, but it had the device.
Yeah, the mind control pogo ball.
But I don't remember what Wesley's role was.
Seems legit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember either. But let's just say that two out of his three episodes, at least, feature the unsung young boy hero when no one else would listen to him. So it's kind of a theme at this point.
Well, when you say it like that, it sounds bad. The unsung young boy.
But it's totally true. And Picard and Riker are getting all short with Wesley when he's like, I don't know, I'm not going anywhere with this guy. When he's talking about, like, following who they think is Data, but it's actually Lore wearing Data's uniform. He's like, I'm not going anywhere with this guy. He's like, fuck you, you little shit. You're going to do what you're told, acting ensign.
Yeah, it's my responsibility. I'm responsible for his training. I'll take care of him, Captain. I'm like, whoa.
They should have put, like, a little Sharpie marker behind, like, Data's ear or something, so they would have known which one was the right one. Like, if you have twins and you're brand new to having twins, and you're like, fuck, I'm not going to remember which one's which.
I wonder at what point in time you stop doing that, and if you ever, like, misidentify one, and then all of a sudden they have swapped for life now.
Yeah,
like, I don't know. In the process of raising twins. Like, when the Sharpie wears off and you forget to put a new coat on, oh, shit, which one's which?
Yeah, as they get older, they become more identifiable because of the differences in their lives. But yeah, I mean, when they're babies, I mean, first of all, every baby looks exactly the same, and I don't want any mothers to at me. Babies are weird looking, and they all look the same.
Yeah,
I've had two. I should know.
I mean, at that point, they can be interchangeable too, because, you know, they haven't necessarily formed an identity around their name yet, so they're malleable. You can form them.
Still would have been a good idea to mark the Data.
Yes, I agree. This whole thing could have been just solved had they just, you know, put a little ounce of preventative measure in there.
Or like one of those bracelets where you can't take it off without cutting it, so they would know. Like when you go to the club.
Right.
Or a concert.
Or like when you put your registration tag on your car and you use a razor blade to, like, slice it up so nobody else can peel it off without it just shredding.
That's a sneaky sneak.
Thwarted by a box cutter.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I don't know if there's a whole lot more to say about this episode. I mean, we can talk about how it resolves, and you know, there's a whole B story about the crystalline entity that is responsible for wiping out the 411 colonists on the planet where Lore and Data's bodies were found. We come to find out that Lore was the one that led the crystalline entity there, because he was kind of disenfranchised by the humans because they thought he was too perfect. He was apparently the first creation if you believe what he says anyway in the episode, he was Dr. Noonien Sung's first creation, and he was too close to being human, too perfect. So he got dismantled, and Data was created, so he'd be a little bit more easily distinguishable as not being human. But somehow a very upset and wanting revenge Lore contacted the crystalline entity and sold out all the colonists, like, hey, there's 411 people whose energy you can suck down here, which is why he's the only one left alive. And like, not only did it kill the people, but it just killed all the vegetation, insects, plants, wildlife, everything on the planet, whatever this crystalline
entity is. Why Data was left? Did I miss that explanation?
Well, my belief is that he was like probably functioning. Yeah, he's non-organic, so they're not going to take it. I mean, he's not going to. If the crystalline entity wants organic life, and it seems like it does, you know, otherwise it could have just taken the Enterprise and could have sucked the energy off of that. All when you look at all the energy powering the lab equipment and all the stuff underground at the planet, it would have taken all that, or it would have sucked the energy off of that. It looks like it was just after organic life. So Lore easily sold them out, but in the meantime, like, Data was the one. By the time the crystalline entity got there, Data was the one that was active, and he was probably just like put to sleep by the colonists and say, like, hey, tell our story, say, you know, tell everybody what went on here. If somebody finds you later on down the road, we're gonna die. So but anyway, so, you know, that brings up the whole question as to this Noonien Sung character. It's the first time we've heard him really mentioned. The creator, the father of Data and Lore.
The father.
Yeah, he was like a big shot, like robotics inventor, engineer, trying to develop the positronic brain on Earth. And it failed. And he was, I don't want to say exiled, but he pretty much just like boned out and then just went to the outer reaches somewhere and on this planet just set up a lab with the colonists to continue his research.
And he put an Enigma box or an Enigma device on every box.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the Noonien Sings are there. They have a checkered past in the Star Trek, you know. His great 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 grandfather, whatever, is the one who created the augments who became, you know, Khan and his followers and stuff like that. So they have a habit of tinkering where they shouldn't be tinkering. They're a classic example of what Justin says, that it's going to be a well-intentioned scientist that leads to our deaths.
Yeah. Yeah. Humanity is, I don't want to say fine on its own, but it's probably best left to their own devices, because if you try to modify them, only pain awaits on the other side.
Yeah. Skynet and pain. Lots of pain.
Yeah. Lots of Terminators, dude.
Yeah. That's what Lore is. He's a creeper.
Yeah. So, luckily, our young boyfriend, Wesley, is the only one that could see through.
We might have put some separation between those words there, Andy.
our young friend.
Or don't use the word our.
Yes, our young friend, Wesley Crusher, is the only one that can see through Lore's lie. He saw his face ticking before he used like some little like numbing pen thing to like transfer his tick down to Data's unconscious corpse. You know, he caught him saying things that Data wouldn't say, but ultimately what gave it away to the rest of the crew was when Captain Picard said, make it so. And Lore was like, what? That was how they could tell. That was what tipped it off for everybody else that maybe that wasn't Data. But they didn't act on it like right then. It just kind of like sat on it for a minute and let him go down to the cargo bay where he was going to be jettisoning, basically like being out a giant tree that they were going to then shoot a phaser at to destroy, to prove their power and how big and powerful they are in front of the crystalline entity. And meanwhile, Lore's whole his whole motivation was he was probably not going to be sending out a tree. He was up to no good for sure. But then when Wesley catches him, he's going to like beam Wesley out there. Whether or not he was going to shoot Wesley, I don't know.
Space boy.
Yeah, and we all were rooting for Lore at that point.
Yeah,
I like it when they all figured out he was Lore, but they're like, "Don't spook him; he's going to spook easy."
Yeah. And then, yeah. So, when
is that, wait, is when he says when he's confused by the make it so comment, I thought Wesley was the only one that was like, hey, this is definitely like, that's when he was trying to speak up and they're like, shut up, well, Wesley. But I thought they were still duped and they just didn't understand why Data was just being weird.
No, Picard does a double take. Like there's a moment. Yeah,
I know he does the double take, but I don't think that he figured out. I thought he just thought that was weird because they still don't do anything. It's not like they're secretly saying, okay, he's going over to here. We know where he's at. Let's get him. You know, they don't do that.
Yeah, you're right. There's no indication that he for sure knows, or there's not that moment of recognition, but there's a moment of doubt, you know? Mm-hmm. And honestly, especially with Wesley sitting there warning them, it should have been enough to trigger, like, hey, maybe something's up, you know? Quicker than it actually did. But I don't know. I just felt like that was mishandled.
Yeah, and I feel like he needs to have a real discussion with the crew. Like, look, guys, I get that I'm a kid, but you gotta start here listening to me. How many times I saved your asses in episode 2, episode 6, episode 7? You know, you're fucking starting to piss me off and it's driving me crazy. I think I'm over the whole, you know, shut up, Wesley. As much as I can't stand Wesley Crusher, I think it's more infuriating that the crew by this point hasn't they don't look at him as a peer, which I think is ridiculous.
Right. Well, there's an interesting conversation between Data and Lore, though, where they're talking about Wesley Crusher, and Data's like, "Yeah, he appears young on the exterior, but he's like incredibly intelligent." So Data can clearly see it, and I know Geordi sees it because you see like a lot of like admiration between Geordi and Wesley. But yeah, obviously none of the rest of the crew is really on board with that.
Yeah, they're just like, "Fuck off, kid."
Yeah. So well, I mean, weird. Look at it this way. Look at the rest of the bridge crew. How many years did they spend in the academy on various other ships working their way up the ranks to get onto the bridge of a flagship, you know, like the Enterprise? And then all of a sudden, here's this fucking kid who is the daughter of the doctor that the captain used to bang.
The son of the doctor.
Yeah, the son. Sorry, whoops. That was a weird Freudian slip. He's
I get it. You think he's cute. It's fine.
The son, you know, the tender skin. You know, the son of the doctor that the captain used to bang. You know, it's like, of course, there's going to be some animosity towards him on the bridge.
Right. I just feel like with the crew being what it is, where we have a Data. Right, a non-humanoid. We have a Klingon on the ship. I just feel like in this world where anything is possible, it just seems absurd whether to just put age as such a superficial thing to where they're not going to buy into his opinion. I feel like when you've reached a level of interstellar travel, anything is possible, including a 15-year-old boy knowing the answer to things.
Okay, yeah, let's look at it through a wider lens, too. So, capable of interstellar travel, got all these other aliens serving on board, a Klingon of all things, which, you know, was mind-blowing at the time, considering they were, like, the mortal enemies of the Federation. An android.
Deanna Troi, who's got this amazing power.
Yeah, and what appears to be... men in miniskirts.
That's a plus, Randy. It's a plus.
No. I'm speaking to the diversity of the crew and the open-mindedness of everybody on the ship. Why are they so closed off about a young person having the answers?
Doogie Howser's already existed. They should know that there are boy geniuses out there. What's the fucking problem?
Yeah. No, that's weird. It's like thing they're biased about.
I get that they don't believe him. It's just the how vehemently they don't believe him. Like, they yell at him. Like, I could get, like, Wesley, that's absurd. Of course, Commander Data can handle himself and he wouldn't be overtaken by blah, blah, blah. But they're just straight like, shut the fuck up, you idiot.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Deanna should be like, he believes what he's saying is true. Maybe we should check the data. Not that data, but the number data. Crunch the numbers. Yeah, I don't know. It seems foolish to me, and it bothers me. I don't get it. I don't care if it would be a gorilla in that in that chair. They got there for a reason. I think that they have a voice and that they should be heard.
Right. Just with what they've seen happen, like they've had like full on like body positions already. You know, they would think that, you know, at least on some level, they would sort of feel like give some validity to it, or, you know, it seems to be something that would easily be easy to check and this and that. But no, just to be so angry at this right. mere suggestion of improprieties is what surprises me.
Yeah. They're like, shut up, fucker. Get the hell out of here. Go play with your dolls or something. They're so mean. It's the worst. Oh, well.
Well, I think, well, yeah, let's grade it, you know? I think we're at that point where we should start throwing out some ratings for this episode.
Sure. Our 10-minute episode is now 40 minutes
long. As it happens, right? As it tends to be. So who wants to go first this week? Because I really don't know which way it's going to fall.
I'll go first. You know, I went last time. So,
sure.
Lore is a very important character to Data's story. I won't say lore for the pun there. Shut up Wesley aside, you know, I definitely was liking how the crew was interacting with each other. I thought it was great. You know, the absurdity of them like bringing this thing from an alien planet and assembling it and letting it, you know, roam free. You know, that's kind of on the sci-fi of the time, but I think the sum of its parts made me enjoy this a lot. I also will note that I started watching on Netflix instead of Paramount Plus, and on Netflix you can watch shit at 1.5 times speed, and you can watch these episodes in less than 30 minutes. So maybe that helped too, but I am a yay, and I like this episode a lot more than I thought I was going to, so I will be a firm yay.
Cool. Well, Justin, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a yay too. I enjoyed this episode. I do think Lore is a creeper. I spoke to just sort of remembering last week of how he was just sort of this cold and calculating just jerk off that thought he was better than everyone else, and he pretty much was that. So I'm glad I didn't misremember that. So that's good. But yeah, I dig it. I'm looking forward to more episodes with Lore, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, cool. I'm going to make it a unanimous yay vote for me as well. And I actually kind of dug the cheesy music and the over-the-top lighting and the over-dramatic feel of it, because I feel like it helped try to make the episode feel like it was from another genre. You know, it did have its roots, you know, deeply steeped in you know, the sci-fi of the 60s, 70s, 80s leading up to that kind of thing. But it also kind of had that, like, it was very distinctly 80s kind of feel to it, and I appreciated that. So yeah, it definitely gets a yay from me.
Wow, so, our first back to back yay.
Yeah, so that's five yays altogether, right? Five yays and what is it? Seven nays? Yeah.
Are you keeping score? Do you have that written down somewhere?
I don't. I'm trying to remember. We're on episode 12. And I think last week we were 4-7, so now we're 5-7.
Sweet. Catching up.
Yeah. Yeah. We're on a little bit of a streak here. So let's see if we can keep it up for next week. Next week we have an episode called Angel One. And the blurb is, Riker, Troy, Data, and Yar beam down to a planet ruled by a matriarchal government in the hopes of locating a missing freighter crew. Gotta warn you guys, it's rated 5.7 stars, which is two full stars under this one.
Oh man.
So it looks like we're gonna have a bad time.
But it is worth noting that it is higher than Code of Honor, which was the one where Tasha was sort of doing that Thunderdome fight.
Yeah.
If you guys remember that one. That was 5.1.
Yeah. So it's another like planet of women kind of thing, but at least maybe since they're matriarchs, it's maybe not over sexualized. So we'll have to see.
That's all you got to say.
I know. Well, Troy's there to balance it out, though.
And I'm totally misremembering. I thought Tasha Yar died in like episode 8. Like, I thought she died really, really early on in the show. I guess she sticks around a little while longer than I thought.
Yeah.
It happens this season, though, right? It happens in season 1.
Does it? I thought
Don't ask me. I thought it was episode 8. She's already gone 3 episodes longer than I thought she was.
Because I know she wasn't around long enough to transition into the new uniforms in season 3 where they have the stand-up collars. So I thought it was season 1, but maybe she eats it in season 2. I don't know. See, that's very much the hot tub time machine thing going on. Like, where is the episode? When's it going to happen?
I know like a tar monster that kills her. So as soon as I see the monster, I'm like, that is later.
This is it. Yeah, I thought it was season 2. So I don't know.
It could totally be season 2. I have a total Mandela effect here.
Yeah. In that case, it really took the studio people over at Paramount a while to realize that, whoa, this one's not working out. You know, you would think they would have figured it out sooner.
I mean, her screen time is almost nothing in these episodes. I mean, they've really pigeonholed her in a certain thing. So I'm curious to see what she does in this next episode, because it seems that she was given a lot early on, and her character was given a lot of backstory about you know avoiding like the rape gangs and stuff like that. And she really seems to be a very much secondary character right now. But I mean, honestly, so is Jordy.
Yeah. So. Hopefully she'll get her moment to shine once again before she gets consumed by the tar monster.
Maybe it is the first season. I don't see her.
What do you mean shine again? Did she shine at all?
Well, if I said again, I just meant in general, period.
We all shine on. Mm-hmm. Like the song.
Sure.
John Lennon.
He imagined all the people.
Okay, it's season 1. I'm not going to spoil it for you guys, but we got a little ways to get there. I found it, though.
Oh, okay, cool.
Looking on IMDb, scrolling through the through the episodes. Yeah, so we got quite a few more episodes to get through before we get there. So,
can't wait.
Yep, it's going to be a good time. All right, well, that was fun. That was fun. So who knows when we're going to see Lore again? You know, he was beamed out just before he had a chance to shoot Data, and presumably he and the crystalline entity are vacationing off somewhere tropical until Lore needs to come back around and cause some trouble. Maybe we won't see him again until he's partnered up with the Borg. I don't remember. So we'll let it ride and see what happens.
Let it ride.
That's right. I encourage everyone to watch it on Netflix at 1.5 speed.
Yeah, I didn't even, because I do have Paramount Plus, but I didn't even think of watching it there. I've just been out of force of habit watching it on Netflix, where I've been watching all the other Star Trek series. Like, I'm like midway through season 3 in Deep Space Nine, and starting to get good with the Dominion. I'm partway through season 4 of Voyager. I've got my finger in many different Star Trek pies right now.
You're really branching out in all the Treks at once. So it's got to be a maddening experiment.
They're all going to come together at some point.
Well, it's funny because I'll hear them refer to alien races like across all 3 shows, like ones that I've never really taken notice of before until we started doing this deep dive into Next Generation. For example, do you remember a few episodes back that one plague race that the only ones that survived were on board that ship and they were just looking for some place to die? Within a week of that, I watched a Deep Space Nine episode where they're talking about that same race and there was a ship of them. Or there was at least one of them or whatever, like coming to the station, and it wasn't like a big deal. Like they were making a, you know, oh my God, it's, you know, Mr. Plague coming to the station or anything like that. It was just like a very throwaway line, like, oh, the Talaxian or whatever the hell it is, you know, there's the Talaxian coming to the station, that kind of thing. That wasn't the name of the race. I don't remember. It started with a T, but Tyrellian. Anyway, yeah. Tyrellian. Thank you. Thank you. That sounds right.
I had to look it up. I didn't know that. I'm not a nerd.
Yeah. So it's just kind of fun. I'm like, hey, I know that race. I know their backstory. They all look like blonde 80s Scandinavian types.
And they cough really on each other.
Yeah. Wearing shiny clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're if hot. It was Deep Space Nine, it's only like 3 years in the future from what we saw at Next Generation.
True. So they must have really turned themselves around. They must have found that fountain of youth they were looking for.
That Wyatt really fixed them up.
Yeah. Oh, Dr. Wyatt.
Dr. Wyatt, he fixed it. But full disclosure, I listen to my podcasts at 1.5, so I'm used to the maddening pace that it is. But if you can do it, I encourage you to watch The Next Generation at 1.5 speed. It goes through so much faster.
See, for when I'm researching and I'm watching it for this show, I'll pause it and I'll make notes because I don't want to miss anything while I'm typing notes into my phone. So it takes me, even though it's only like 42 minutes or something like that, or 44 minutes, it takes me an hour to get through every episode because I'm sitting there tapping away so I don't forget what happens. So I can talk about it with all you fine folks.
I like forgetting.
I don't know. Maybe I'll try to freeform it at some point in time and see if it feels a little bit more natural. Because I feel like when I'm going off of notes, that it's not the most organic thing in the world. I'm going down, going like, "Oh yes," and then Jordy makes a weird comment to Wesley. You know, it just feels weird and out of place. So if it comes up organically, maybe it'll be a little bit more natural.
Sure. Maybe just say whatever you would have written down, just say it out loud, and you'll remember.
Yeah, fair enough. That assumes I have any kind of memory or capability for memory left.
Like, my brain, man, shut up, Wesley. That's mean. These people are mean. Fuck them.
I mean, if I wasn't taking notes, I probably would have done an entire episode on just the whole shut up, Wesley thing. Yeah.
But, you know. Honestly, this ship is about to explode, so why don't we just jump on in this pod and get the hell out of here?
All right. I'd like to take a moment to thank everybody for taking the time out of your busy day to listen to us babble on about Star Trek and other silly things. Be sure to check out the Mothership Geek Legacy podcast if you like other things revolving around geek news and reviews. And join us next week where we're going to be talking about some matriarchal planets. Get the fuck out of here.